The moderator, one of the moderators of the Food and Nutrition Security pre-think tank meeting on Tuesday, all day Tuesday. He's with the Richard Ivey School of Business at the University of Western Ontario. Please welcome David Sparling.
Thanks, Peter. And that was a great lead-in to what I'm going to talk about. And I'm grateful for it because my topic in 15 minutes is to talk about integrating health and agriculture considerations along the value chains to meet food and nutrition security for all. Take any two words and I could probably talk for 2 hours. Anyways, but I don't have 2 hours, so let's start. Basically, I like to think about this as really three levels of goals when you're talking. If you start with a situation where people are food and nutrition insecure, then really you want to start moving them up the chain. Obviously, the very first step is to sort of improve the level of food security, increasing calories, hopefully nutrition as well as that, using things like extension, inputs, finance, different kinds of resources may come from governments, may come from NGOs, but this is really about that very first step, trying to make sure people have enough food. Once they have enough food, we start to pay more attention to what's the nutrition look like and what are the kinds of things that we can do to help with that. So education, access to better foods, reformulation, some of the things we talked about with food manufacturers on Monday, but we talk about them on a regular basis. Ultimately, your goal is to create a situation where the people involved in the business have a certain enough economic security that they can actually afford the health care. They can actually afford nutritious food and enough food. And that is the end goal. To me, everything else is just partway through. And if you leave somebody food secure and even nutrition secure, their life isn't secure. And so we need to move all the way down that. So we think about things in terms of value chains and exactly the same sort of thing Hal talked about. And when we're looking and talking about value chains, and really what they are is very complex networks. This is an extremely simplified version of what a chain would look like because you have many, many players along all of this. And we think about product flows moving from all the way up the chain from input suppliers through all the manufacturing production processes to the consumer. And we think about information flowing both ways along that chain. When we talk about making improvements and we talk about making changes, there's a lot that the people in this chain can actually do, but nothing will happen probably if it's left entirely to the chain. Essentially, what you need to think about is what's your knowledge network? What kind of resources can you bring to bear? And so Hal talked eloquently about those. One of the resources is his organization, but then there are NGOs, governments, universities, all sorts of things. So we need to think about how we use those knowledge networks to really go through our three levels of goals that we want. Starting at the beginning of the chain, input suppliers, we really are not tapping the potential of this. And there are chemicals, there are fertilizers, but honestly, I think in terms of improving the world's nutrition security and food security, it really relates to... Sorry. We are really dealing with a situation where there's a lot we can do with genetics, and it will be the key to the future. But that key has, to some extent, been impacted by the world's reaction to biotechnology, particularly EU and Japan, but other parts of the world. When we look back at the mid-1990s, when people started to think about what was biotechnology going to do for us, companies like Monsanto did really believe we're going to feed the world, we're going to change everything. And people in those days were talking about increasing yields, increasing drought resistance, increasing cold resistance, insect resistance, putting more high-quality nutritional value into foods using biotechnology, and also having enough to actually focus on development. So we had a pretty wide view of what this technology was going to do. The market does rule, and if you go into a market and they hammer you long enough, then you move out. And so what's happened is we've seen a real retrenchment in biotechnology, basically back to sort of a few main crops, a few minor things. And we are now focusing almost all of our pretty enormous potential, whether we talk genetics, genomics, biotech, nanotech, on a few crops that are global in nature and that really grow in North and South America. That's where we're focusing all our resources. I think that's a real waste. So my first priority at the bottom of the chain would be to re-engage our research potential. In some way, shape, or form, start to devote some of the incredible resources we have in universities, in companies, in government labs on food security, on nutrition security for all of the world. And I think companies can allow some of the researchers to work sort of using the 3M model. You can use 15% of your time to work on anything you want. I think it would be really great if biotechnology companies said to their employees, you can work 15% on anything you want for the developing world. So that would be one. The second step is actually, and Tom talked about it yesterday, connecting farmers to markets, and Hal talked about it today. And if we think about small farmers, what do they need? They need access to capital. They need the right crops that are actually tailored for their particular environment. They need extension. They need education. They also need access to capital, access to market. When and that last piece is probably the most important piece. What we've found is that, and like Hal's example, you don't connect 5,000 Mayan farmers to a market individually. Essentially, you have to create the kind of networks that work along the entire, with other members of the supply chain to make sure you bring the right product in, you produce it with the right sort of quality metrics, and you get it to them. Companies like Costco, companies like our large retailers, they want one person that they can deal with. They want to know that supply is going to be there when they need it, and so on. And so essentially, you have to create some of that. In our sort of analyses, what we've seen is that either industry associations in some way, shape, or form, or cooperatives seem to work the best at these kinds of things, letting people take care of their own destiny, letting people control that. So when we looked at some in Mexico, what we found, we were looking at how do small farmers connect with how do they connect with retailers, either international retailers or in Mexican retailers. And we found basically no small farmer connects to a retailer unless they actually belong to some sort of an association or cooperative. They can go into traditional markets, very low value, very low standards, and so on. They can ship to growers and shippers who capture most of the value, but the ones who actually got the most out of their production efforts were ones who organized themselves. And we found sort of 50 to 100 is probably a pretty manageable sort of number, it seemed, and then went directly to retailers. In those cases, the cooperatives provided everything that that these farmers needed. They provided access to capital. They provided training. They provided standards. They provided an interface to the retailer. They provided packing facilities in some cases. Electronic data interchange, if that was needed to be part of that. And so these are really the organizing, but these were farmers who actually organized it. What we also found is what we typically find in any sort of initiative like this, somebody has to be a leader. Somebody has to have the vision that they can actually make this happen and push it. In Canada, we've seen sort of a different role in some of our cases. And what we've seen is that the associations, industry associations particularly, will take more of a coordinating role. They don't get in between. What they actually do is coordinate, work with retailers, say, we'll get you these products, we'll have them go through this, this one happened to be a meat example, we'll have them go through a processor, we'll set the standards, we'll create the advertising, we'll work with the retailer, you commit to supplying, you commit to following all of this. And so that seemed to work quite well, and that's worked in a number of industries and different pieces of that. Moving up the supply chain, and this one you could spend a long, long time on. How do you increase When you get into food processing, food manufacturing, we're not talking about food security, we're talking about improving nutrition. And what are the sort of things that we can actually do at this level of the chain? And there is just a whole lot that can happen. But basically the idea here is that you really need to get behind companies, help them figure out where they want to go with respect to nutrition, and support their innovation. And that can be, it was interesting on, we had the president of Campbell's talk at the pre-conference, and he said, it's amazing how motivating just getting an award for trying to do something better does for a company. Said it just gets people behind it. So the other thing we don't do particularly well, at least here, is we aren't really wonderful at sharing our research between universities and companies. We aren't very good at getting nutrition research or nutrition technologies out that quickly. So I think there's a lot there. Companies are also finding that by partnering with NGOs, universities, and so on, they can actually extend their capabilities, and it also can allow them to reach back into the small farms. Companies are looking for good guidelines on what should we be doing on a nutrition basis. And they're really expecting the nutrition community to say, here are the targets. And if you can reach those targets, we'll reward you in the marketplace somehow. So we're looking at those sorts of things. At the top, essentially what we want to see is retail commitment. And that's commitment in a number of different levels. If we're talking about small farms and small farm access to the market, they have to be receptive to that. They have to somehow support those kinds of activities. And Hal's example was exactly dead on. These are the sorts of things that retailers can do and now are being told to do. The level of interest in supporting small farms around the world, the level of interest in supporting local farms is huge right now. And retailers get it. If consumers say, I want to support my local farmer, and I don't see anything in your store from that, retailers change. And so we've seen some movement this way, but what's missing from this, certainly I know in Canada what's missing from this, are those networks that actually bring local food into the cities in enough quantity and enough consistency that retailers can depend on it. So really, network formation here for local food and network formation internationally would be huge. Commitment to improving their nutritional offerings, to really looking at what's on their shelves and making a difference and really going out and reorganizing what they do. And we've seen Loblaws is one of our big manufacturers. And they can do things on a big scale when they actually make a commitment to do it. They made a commitment a few years ago to organic. And so one day there was very little organic around the store. The next day there were 50 private label organic products on the shelves. And they just organized themselves to do that. A little while ago, they realized people are looking for new, more healthy food products, and they came up with a blue label. Now, you see, this is because the last point, easy to read, easy to understand messaging is critical at the retail level. And so they said, well, we'll just put a blue stripe on it. It means it's more healthy than the stuff that doesn't have a blue stripe. Doesn't really mean much, but could be reduced salt, it could be lower sugar, and so on. And again, one day, I forget how many products, but one day there's a whole line of blue line products all around the store because they just decided, okay, we're going to take a more nutrition focus there. If we think about achieving food security and nutritional security, really what we have to do is start and step back and say, well, what's the goal in this particular project? Because what you do is very different. If your goal is simply food security, you take different actions than if your goal is nutrition security, and definitely different actions than if your goal is economic security. So one of the things we have to do is clearly identify the target, what exactly are we trying to achieve, and then create the plan to do that. The second, if we move up to the sort of nutrition, I think we're still really missing a very clear message on what exactly is good nutrition and what should we be trying to do and what should companies be trying to do. Partnerships, nothing happens anymore, at least in almost every business I'm in. And I do some stuff in biotechnology, I do some stuff in bioproducts, and I do a lot of stuff in the agriculture and food industry. Nothing happens without partnerships. So that's going to be critical over the next little while. And we really need to think about the value chains as one set of activities, and then all the knowledge networks that can feed into those as another resource that you want to be thinking about. How am I tapping that resource? Obviously, supporting extension, supporting education, supporting clear messaging, that's a no-brainer. We need to do more of that and get better at that. And finally, acknowledge that success at every level it depends really on creating some kind of viable business opportunity. If you can create that viable business opportunity, then you can actually have an impact on all those three goals. And with that, I say thank you very much.